This is Blurring the Lines with Adam Bell and Peter Nicolaitis, IT entrepreneurs. Adam and Peter take on the topics of technology, business, life, and the pursuit of happiness and blur them together in the 21st century.
Good afternoon, good morning, or good evening, and welcome to the Blurring the Lines podcast, episode 233. I am your host, Peter Nicolaitis, and joining me, as always, is my...
We are now recording. I think you're up.
Good afternoon, good morning, or good evening, and welcome to the Blurring the Lines podcast, episode 233. I am your host, Peter Nicolaitis, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Adam Bell.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
I'm actually doing pretty good.
Good. Doing
pretty good. Yep. How about yourself?
I am doing well. But you know what I heard last week? I heard another podcast say that they should hit the big red button.
We're having an effect. We're setting the trends. And it's about time, I must say.
Yeah. I was like, hey, that's our line.
It's our line. That's cool. And you're not talking about the Friends with Brews podcast either.
No, I forget who it was. I was on a troll. I listened to one thing and then it said, you might like this. And it went over to that. And I forget what it was, but that's the thing that stuck with me.
Okay. All right. Well, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
So, what's new? What's new on your side?
New wise. Well, I got back from Mexico. Okay. Did our annual mission trip that went really well. We had we had a couple people get under the weather. One, just an older lady that, you know, this was a bit physical for her, and then an older gentleman that happened to have, you know, just have a UTI, which can that can just happen. I mean, whether in Mexico or anywhere. So yeah. He had a couple of days of downtime, but that's really good. I mean, considering you go to Mexico, it's normally GI issues that really get people. Mm-hmm. And we were good on that. We worked on three projects. We helped two women at church with some things around their house, I was on a team that we went up into the mountains about an hour away in a little tiny town, San Martin de Rosnos, and built a new outhouse for a family. The mother-in-law is wheelchair bound and they've got young kids, and they had this really terrible outhouse. It was what mm-hmm. the family used. And so we were able to make something a little bit nicer than that. So that was fun.
That sounds very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, we did VBS. We had lots of kids coming over and family days, and hung out with the local church there, which was fun. Went hiking, got poison ivy. Yay. But it was funny how I was telling people, we're walking along the trail. I mean, my wife included. And I'm like, there's poison ivy over there. Stay away from that. And they're like, no, that doesn't look like poison ivy. I'm like, I'm just telling you, it's poison ivy. Don't go over there. You know, and even though I was conscious of it, I still got it on my ankles and a couple little places on my wrists where the skin was exposed. And, you know, had one guy say, I never get poison ivy. I'm not allergic to it. I said, it's not an allergy. You can't not get poison ivy. It's an irritant. That's an oil. Everybody's affected. Now, how bad the effect is what mm-hmm. it is. But
right.
You are not immune from poison ivy.
So I think that if I recall, I had a close run-in with poison ivy back a long time ago when I was a kid, right? Mm-hmm. But since then, I don't think I have, and I'm certain I have encountered it like physically over the, you know, all my trail running and mountain biking and hiking that I do. But it's funny because a couple weeks ago, my friends were up honeymooning in Vermont, And, you know, we were doing the typical touristy thing, walking around Woodstock, Vermont, like people from Massachusetts. And we sat down by the river, and you know, she's like, is this poison ivy? I'm like, I don't even recognize it. I don't know. So I whipped out my phone and I asked my handy, you know, AI assistant, like, here's a picture. Is it, does this look like poison ivy? And it broke it all down and was like, yep, probably.
Yep.
And so I don't know if she ended up getting any itches or something. I was fine. So I don't know. But I haven't had any poison ivy issues, but I know a year or so ago and a couple years ago, I had some kind of reaction and I was getting super itchy and like a rash on my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of anything that I did that would have caused it. You know, I think it might have been like a stress reaction or something. I'm not really sure.
Mm-hmm.
But also last year I had itches like on my inner arms, like my upper forearms and lower upper arms, like in the elbow area.
Yeah.
But that seems to have been triggered either by the sunscreen I was using or the lack thereof.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I haven't done a super deep analysis, but I bought this, Coppertone auto, gel, clear gel with aloe vera, you know, kind of stuff. All the active ingredients look the same as three different Coppertone sunscreens I use. There was that one, there was just the plain Sport, and then there was Water Babies. I used them all, but when I used this one, it seemed to get itchy as a result. But only like when combined with excessive sun exposure, which is why you wear sunscreen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I stopped using that one for a long time, thinking I was just allergic to that sunscreen. But then I used it again a couple of days, but I didn't really need it and I didn't notice anything. And then I used it again and it was out in the sun and I got these little welts and, you know, lots of little, you know, definitely a rashed up reaction. So I stopped using it. And I just threw that one away. So it's like, you know, it's only happening when I use that one. So let's get rid of it. So, So what else is new?
So new wise, so gotten back, things are resuming at work. One of the things that I am working on right now, well, you said you had a fitness update.
Do have a fitness update,
and I think mm-hmm. I know why you're not receiving my fitness updates. You're like, I think I only see his walking. You know what happened to CrossFit? I'm not yoga and everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure it was sending you notifications when your notifications were muted, because I'm doing those at 5 a.m., which would be 6 a.m. your time, but you're probably still muted at that point.
Usually still muted, often probably usually still sleeping as well. Yep. So, so this weekend I signed up for a new running coach officially.
Okay.
So I've been following these guys on YouTube for some time, but I am now officially a client of Coach Lindsay Parry. He and his team are out of South Africa, so they've got a great accent and they talk about building your plan, and that makes it entertaining for me. But they've got a plan called, you know, a whole program for faster beyond 50, I think it's called. And I was like, all right, you know what, I'm old enough to participate, what the hell. So I signed up, and of course it was a typical, you'd recognize the whole thing. You know, like normally this program costs $597, you know, for a year, but if you sign up today, it's only $297 and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. So I was like, all right, that's fine, I'll do it. So I signed up, but one of the things that's pretty cool about it is, so I don't pay for Strava anymore. I did for a while. I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And they used to give you like, I don't remember, a week's worth or like a month's worth of historical data, but then you had to pay for more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all that data, mind you, is in my Apple Health account, right? Yeah. So, you know, so what happens is I record a workout on the watch. It goes into Apple Health. It also uploads to Strava. Fine. So Strava used to provide some different analytics and, you know, and charts and graphs. And of course it's social, but that's not why I'm not using Strava so I can share it with other folks. The biggest thing I use Strava for is one thing is so I can share like the maps and stuff pretty easily. Mm-hmm. The other is tracking the mileage on my shoes.
Yeah.
Which coincidentally I generally ignore, because I tend to wear my shoes a lot longer than, you know, manufacturer recommends. I judge by the wear and tear that I feel. And if I can feel a difference in, like, I always have like a newer pair and an older pair. And when the older pair starts to feel different in a bad way, then I'm like, okay, now it's time to replace these guys. Right.
Yeah.
But I generally run way more than the 250 miles that they, you know, usually say. But what's cool is Coach Perry doesn't sync directly with Apple Health. It syncs directly with Strava. So my data goes from Apple into Strava into Coach Perry. But then they've got all the Strava style visualizations in their portal. So I'm basically getting Strava for included.
No, that's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, I was like, okay, so Strava's like what, $80 a year now? So it cost me like $210 or something now. I'm like, okay, you know, it's getting better. It's getting better. So and they do weekly group coaching calls. So if I have a question, you know, there's usually, I don't know, I was only on one of them so far, but you know, I can go there and be part of a group to ask questions. If you want to set up one-on-one calls, they charge like $50 for one of those. Mm-hmm. And then there's forums, which you can use 24/7, and they've got training plans, and they also have 3 weekly live or recorded strength training plans.
Okay.
So yeah, so I'm signing up for that. A lot of the strength training seems pretty much, you know, there's a lot of overlap with what I already do with my personal trainer. Mm-hmm. So for now, and also here we go, more details. I'll be wrapping up shoulder physical therapy at the end of the month. So I'm essentially being transferred over from my physical therapist to my personal trainer for that. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, it's like my hope is that when I wrap up PT, then I'll have more time, you know, at least 1, maybe 2 hours a week to dedicate to strength training, either with my personal trainer's program or these guys' program.
Mm-hmm.
So, but related to that, one of the guys asked, okay, you're training for a 50 miler. And he says, what do you think? What comes after that? I said, you know, he said, do you think you're going to do 100? And I was like, I mean, it's early still, but if I go through the 50 and I don't hate myself so much that I never want to run again, I could see myself doing that. And so, so it seems like the next product, next logical progression would be that or 100K.
Yeah.
And he said, you're probably going to want another watch. And I was like, I've been feeling that, because even now when I go out for my runs, my long runs, if I don't turn off like all the whiz bang features on the Apple Watch, even using it as just, you know, paired with my phone, it's the battery's just not going to make it. And I'm, you know, I'm doing the math. I'm like, there's no way this thing is ever going to get me through a 50 miler. No. This is not going to happen. Right.
How many hours is that typically?
I mean, I'm on a plan right now that's sub 13. So I'm planning to do it, you know, 13 hours is my upper limit on my plan.
Mm-hmm.
But when I did the 50K, which is 31 miles, I did that in 7 hours, 1 minute and change.
Mm-hmm.
So if you extrapolate, you know, if I could keep up that pace, adding another 20 miles on top of that would probably be another 5-6 hours on top of that. So that's going to be 12 to 13 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't see my ultra finishing that, you know, unless if I do it like turn everything off and just do heart rate, right? But at that point, I could just, because I use an external Bluetooth heart rate monitor, I could just have that paired with the phone.
Yeah.
Problem solved, right? And so I'm like, why do I even have this stupid thing, right? So that all that said, I ordered the Garmin Forerunner 955 Solar Edition, and there was either that or the Garmin Phoenix. But the Phoenix is like $1,000 watch, and the Forerunner is like a $500 watch. But now, since it's an older model, it's like a $400 watch. So I have one of those coming. And I expect that, you know, I'll probably keep the Ultra as my day-to-day watch, and my Forerunner will be my weekend warrior watch. So tech update. So I'll have that next week and hopefully be able to give you an update possibly by next week. So, cool. But wait, there's more. So I noticed a little over a month ago, I believe, maybe around that time, could have been around Memorial Day even, that I was cramping up, and not like just like leg cramps after running.
Not in a good way, huh?
Not in a good way. Is there ever any good way? But what I did notice was like I was at my friend's house and I was just trying to undo the gun lock off one of my pistols. And my hand was cramping up just trying to do that. And like, you know, trying to like open up, you know, twist a pickle jar or something. Like my hand would cramp and I'm like, ugh, and I got to like, you know, manually move my fingers to loosen them up. I was like, what's going on? So I did a little thinking about it. And I asked my, my trusty AI assistant. And it's like, you know, I said, this is what's going on. You know, I exercise a lot. I don't know what's going on. You know, it's like, well, it could be dehydration. I was like, well, it's getting hot and I'm running a lot more. And so it definitely sounds like dehydration. I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to take the plunge. So again, heavily being influenced by my YouTube feed and seeing all the people advertising LMNT, element electrolytes, I did a little bit of research and I was like, all right, you know, do I want to buy these? That's kind of expensive. But I've been using the Noon N-U-U-N hydration tablets.
Yeah.
But Element has like triple the amount of sodium, you know, electrolytes, sodium, potassium, and magnesium as a single Noon. And they recommend a lot more than the USDA sodium intake. So apparently, according to sports medicine training, the recommended intake is between 3,000 to 6,000 milligrams of sodium a day. Whereas I believe the RDA is more like a cap of 2,500. And apparently what happened was like there was one study, I think, in the 70s that concluded, oh my God, salt is bad for you. It's terrible. Don't have salt.
Yeah.
And that just became gospel. And apparently it's not all that trustworthy. So I started taking the element things. My cramping immediately was remedied. Mm-hmm. Like the next day, like it hasn't happened since. And only on one day when I cut way back on them, and not intentionally, I just like, I wasn't exercising and, you know, I just kind of, I left home and I forgot to take any with me. That night I had cramps in my calves. So I'm sold. I'm staying salty. And so far it's feeling pretty good.
Staying salty. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll add that to my wish list. I used to get a lot of cramps, and it was before I was drinking coffee before my workouts, and I stopped doing that. I do hydrate in the mornings before I show up to my workout. I have had 32 ounces of water before I have a workout. Yep. But water doesn't cover the real hydration, which you just said, you know, doesn't cover the salt.
Right.
It helps. Or the electrolytes specifically. Yep. So yeah, I probably need to do that. I have to work out harder if I want to be worthy of that.
Well, you know, I did 15 plus mile run this past weekend.
That sounds pretty worthy.
Yeah, that was worthy. But, you know, here's the thing, too, is like I did 15 miles 2 weeks prior as well. Mm-hmm. And when I did 2 weeks prior, I was smoked. You know, I was just like, this is it. I'm tired. I'm, you know, done. I can't take, I could take more steps, but I was like, I am so ready to finish. Yeah. This time when I finished, I was like, that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and the only thing was different really is I took some time to rest. Now, you may recall on Friday afternoon, I had planned to do that 15 mile or I planned to do a 16 mile run that afternoon.
Yeah.
And I got out and I only did 7. And I realized the problem was I had eaten a pretty big lunch just before talking to you.
Uh-huh.
And then we recorded early and I had planned to take a call after that. So I ended up leaving about 3 hours earlier than I had planned to.
Mm-hmm.
And only after an hour on the trail, I realized I'm not hungry at all. I haven't craved a snack this entire time. Oh, I'm running on a full stomach. So of course I didn't go anywhere, right? So I repurposed that day. I made that one of my short day runs. And then the next day I went out and I felt great. And so, you know, I'm like really paying closer attention to rest. Today, I'm kicking myself because it's beautiful outside. It was like in the 60s and not excessively hot and sunny this morning. I really wanted to go out and run, but I'm trying to be good and honor the plan, you know, stick with the plan. Today's a rest day. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Follow the plan. Well, when I was cutting lavender in June, man, I sweat like crazy. And I drank so much water, but I would have been better with a little bit of electrolyte. Well, and I did. I drank Gatorade while I was doing that too. I'd drink, you know, 48 ounces of water and then also pound a Gatorade with it too.
Yep. But that's the thing is that, you know, I started to realize that there really is something. Like, I was drinking plenty of water. You know, I've been tracking. Well, you still have the smart water bottle?
I do.
Right. And I don't anymore. I do it manually. Right. I just, cause I have a shortcut that I just manually, every time I clear a bottle like this, I know how big it is. And, you know, I just record. I'm drinking. That's not the problem. It's not the water. It's like, I'm not retaining the water where I need to.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling the difference now. So, and if I don't at this point, like, you know, I might add like extra, I don't use like normal table salt, but I use sea salt. And if I'm running low or something, I'll just add some sea salt to whatever and just, you know, make something salty because you don't need much, right? You know, a tablespoon of salt is a lot of salt. That's like your daily, you know, athlete's daily recommendation right there. That's like 4 grams of salt, you know, 4,000 milligrams.
Yeah, these are all examples of it was easier in our 30s. Now we're in our 50s. We got to.
But just imagine, though, I keep on thinking, like, all these things that I'm doing now, what if I had been doing them in my 30s?
You probably could have been an elite athlete.
You know, I would be, you know, a multi, you know, more of a millionaire than I am today. And, you know, like all these things, if only, and that's one of the things I would love to start up. One of the things that my ex-girlfriend recommended was like, she said, I should really be like mentoring young men and just, you know, showing them like how to be an adult kind of thing. And I was just like, you know, I would like to, except young men are too stupid to listen to me. So I'm just going to be wasting both my time and theirs.
Yeah. So before we leave the fitness part of it. So when I was in Mexico, while I did not have my Apple Watch reporting that I was exercising, I actually did exercise every day that I was there. I did because I didn't have time to do a full 1 hour workout. You know, I got like a 30 minute window that I have to, you know, do a workout because I had other obligations of things that I had to get done every day. I had to send emails to the team back home. I had to prepare for the day. And so I got it down to about a 20 to 25 minute. Half of that was yoga. I'd start off with yoga, and I just hit the things that I had to hit, meaning I know which exercise. I had to hit my hips, I had to hit my back, had to hit my hamstrings, got to get my feet. And then I did a push-up calisthenics. So I did 3 sets of 13. I don't know why I landed on 12, and 12 was pretty easy. So I did one more, you know, so I landed on 13. And so I did 36 push-ups every day. And then I did, I alternated between the push-ups and I did core. So I alternated planks, flutter kicks, and I alternated those on days. So one day I'd do planks, the other day I'd do flutter kicks, just keep good core. And I did that every day when I was in Mexico, and I felt pretty good for a, you know, it was better than doing no exercise at all. But I mean, I'm walking, I'm active, you know, I'm building a latrine and carrying stuff. So I was pretty active the whole time, but that's different than exercising.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
yep.
So you can't exercise even when you're.
No, I mean, you know, working constantly, you know, you're getting exercise. It's, it maybe not be like a workout, right? You know, structured workout, but moving. Now, one of my favorite YouTube influencers has been talking about that a lot because he and his wife last year moved from a city in England out to the countryside where they bought a bunch of, you know, just like basically a farmland, you know, out in the middle of nowhere. And so I admittedly haven't been playing their channel as much because it's not as I got it because he was basically he calls himself look, I'm not a fitness influencer. You know, I'm an influencer who posts about fitness, right? Because he's not trying to sell you on anything. He's not trying to say like, you need to do this now. You know, he's like, this is what I did. You know, I decided I was going to run 100 miles and, you know, and he, you know, very self-deprecating. It's hilarious when he does it. But recently he's been focusing back. I guess they have two channels now. There's one for like, you know, life around the farm. And then there's one about him getting back in shape now. But it was about a month or two ago, he was talking about how he used to be one of those people who said like, you know, no, you know, it's not the same. You know, everybody has time for exercise. It doesn't matter. You know, you need to do this and stuff. And he's really like realizing now owning a farm where he's constantly having to, you know, be active and moving around. He says, no, it's not, you know, it's not a workout, but it's exercising, you know, it is a form of exercise. And now I do see how, yes, maybe you wouldn't necessarily have, you know, time for to fitting in a workout, and maybe you don't need it because you're constantly in motion and moving things and moving your body. So,
yeah. Cool. All right. So let's talk about tech. So
tech.
So for your personal files, like are you 100% cloud now? Do you have any local files anywhere in your private world?
Not really. I've got some stuff that's on my hard drive, but in general, everything either is in iCloud or OneDrive for me.
Mm-hmm.
And Backblaze as my backup.
Yeah. So you're using Backblaze for all of your backup needs.
Basically, Backblaze is what's going to get anything that I don't have in OneDrive or iCloud. Or if, you know, something happens, if my iCloud, you know, account or OneDrive account got compromised or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been, well, you know, when Sublime, when I was running Sublime, you know, things were a lot more blurry than they are now between work and home.
Yep.
From the standpoint of, you know, my backup server, you know, I had a server at the office and then my backup server was at my home, my home office. And so it was important for me to back that up. And then I was backing things up across networks and, you know, then also doing disaster recovery after my farm location. But when I sold the company, it's like all those things, the 20 is not going to pay for those. So that means I'm going to have to pay for those if I want to keep those up. And I'm like, I don't really want to keep paying for a backup solution when I have a Google Drive that I am paying for that offers me 10 terabytes of storage. Why am I not backing up there?
I don't know.
I don't know why I'm not backing up there. So that's what I'm in process on. But I like Veeam. So I've got Veeam and the enterprise with replication. And so I back up everything here at my home with one application, meaning I have a file server and domain controller here. I have my workstation, my wife's workstation, and then her personal workstation. I'm backing all those up full, doing full image backups. And I really like that because I also turn around and I'm replicating that to my farm.
Okay.
So that if the house burned down here, I would not lose all that data.
Now, a question. Was this this domain, was this like the old Sublime domain, or did you always have a home domain as well?
Well, I've had a home domain for a long, long time. Okay. So I did have the Sublime domain here too, and I shut it down. I decommissioned the Sublime domain, right. but I still have my home domain. It's funny. I was like, well, do I even really still need a home domain?
Right.
But it is really nice that when my computers are on the domain, I don't always know my wife's password. I can log in as a domain admin on her computer and do what needs to be done.
Got it.
So yeah, the benefits of that, but I don't know, maybe I just have my own administrator password on her computers and don't have the group policies that I like having for 4 computers, you know?
Understood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I definitely went to, you know, like I had domains for myself and stuff, and, you know, I was just like, I don't have enough computers to make it work, you know, worth this. So, yeah. So I'm definitely back to, you know, just a work group, essentially work group setup for a long time now.
And it was different when the girls were here. Both of their computers were on the domain as well, you know, because so we, you know, they had 3 computers between them, and then I keep 3 computers myself all the time. So we had 6 computers plus, you know, plus file server at that point. I'm like, because I looked at it, you know, 700 gig of photos. I'm like, okay, these are going to go live in the cloud. There's no reason not to live in Google Drive. Because they're static. If I need to get in them, I just get in them and use them. I mean,
yep. Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, it's just like find the solution that fits, you know, your requirements, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's going to be, you know, like, and factor in like how much work you're spending on maintaining it and, you know, versus not maintaining. Like, I'm at this point where like, I want low maintenance. Right. And so I have a bunch of files that I store that just live in Glacier, you know, in Amazon S3, and they just sit there in Glacier. And I think, I don't remember how many terabytes of files I have, but it's like $7.32 a month or something like that. And I was just like, I'm just going to forget about that for now. So,
well, you know, and there's still this tiny niggling part of me that is, what happens if one day I can't access those files? If I have them here or in my possession, you know, here at a copy of my farm, I could get them if something happened. You know, so I think that's my only holdout.
But if you if you lose the farm, you don't have your files, right? So,
well, I'd have to lose the farm and the house.
Right. Exactly.
I'd have to lose 2 things.
Yeah.
Because
some redundancy. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think part of me wants to at least keep a copy, especially my photos, my files. I don't really need those. I mean, I just want the photos for the, until I die. I won't care. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about our personal photos. I mean, you're not going to, I mean, my kids aren't going to look through my photos and like, wow, look at all these 10,000, 20,000 pictures that dad took. And
yep. I threw away so many photo albums here from my folks. And, you know, like I kept a few that had my folks in them directly, but there were so many pictures of people and things and place. I was like, I have no idea what these things are or where they are or who they are. I don't need this.
So I may keep, what I may do is I may, at least for my photos, is put a copy in the cloud and then put my offsite copy for just in case, you know, the zombie apocalypse comes, then I can at least look at those photos.
Yep. So we're getting kind of close to time.
Yep. Getting close. Well, so I wanted to ask you, what are you doing for TV and internet these days?
Currently, I have HBO Max, Netflix, Disney Plus, YouTube Premium, not YouTube TV. That's different. So, and then I let my Apple TV Plus lapse, but as part of the Chase Sapphire Reserve price hike to $800 a year, they include Apple TV Plus as part of that. So I don't remember if it's already tripped, if that's flipped or not. I need to check, but essentially I gotta reactivate my Apple TV Plus using that credit right now. So that's what I have for services. I'm assuming that's what you're watching as opposed to that's what I'm paying for as opposed to asking what am I watching. Oh, and I have a Prime TV too, Amazon
Prime. Yeah. And, but you're not subscribing to any like DirecTV or Xfinity or anything.
No,
like
that. It's all cord cutter stuff all over the internet.
Yeah. That's what I had this nice bundle with DirecTV and AT&T, which I don't know if AT&T owns DirecTV or vice versa, whatever. Okay. But so I was paying like $320, and that included Ultimate TV, but then it also included my internet, which was a gigabit up and down.
Okay.
And so they were only charging me $70 for the internet and then like $200 and some odd for the TV, you know, and then all the fees, you know, you're like, it's $199. And then you have $23 worth of fees all, you know, all in there. And so, you know, same with the internet. It was $70 plus the fees. Yep. So now DirecTV and AT&T are splitting back out, at least from billing wise. So they're saying, you know, your DirecTV is now one bill, your AT&T is one bill. So now my internet has gone from $70 discounted in this bundle that I didn't choose to unbundle. It's going to cost me $135 for it. So that's a $50 increase. And then I'm paying the $199 plus taxes for the DirecTV, which is, you know, another $240.
Yep.
Like, well, now I'm paying almost $400 for a month for internet and TV. So I'm going,
that's a lot, dude.
So I'm going to fix the glitch. So I'm looking at, I would like to do YouTube TV to replace the DirecTV. And then my electric company, they offer gigabit speed with them for $80 a month. So it's a gig up and down. It's right here. It's ground, you know, it's an equivalent to AT&T.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to do that.
Yeah. I mean, so like for media streaming, et cetera, like I've got my cell phone, my fiber in Vermont, and my fiber in Massachusetts. And for, again, the way, like right now, I get a discount for the cell phone bundle. They include Apple Music, HBO, Netflix. I pay for like $10 a month for those. And they include Disney Plus, and Amazon Prime includes Prime Video. Mm-hmm. So I'm paying like $10 a month directly for HBO, Netflix, and everything else is just included with something else.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not free, but it's, you know, it's something that I would already be buying anyway. So,
You go. Yeah. I think, I mean, if YouTube can get us, really the sport we want to watch, sports in the fall, football in the fall, that's the important things. And not, I mean, not just we want to be able to watch everything that we had from a football standpoint, and I think we can with YouTube TV. So probably going to go that route. The good thing with streaming though is you're not signing up for a 3-year contract, right? If this thing,
for now, until they decide to start changing that.
Yeah, until it completely commoditizes and people are like, and they realize, well, all the cord cutters don't have cords anymore. So it's time to book them into contracts.
Yep. It'll start. Just wait off. For it. Just wait for it. I'm sure it'll come.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Cool. Well, so look for me for an update in the next couple, you know, episode or two on the Garmin Forerunner. We'll see how my transition or adoption of that goes. And I think that's all I got. You got anything else? I don't think I got anything else.
I think that'll wrap us up for the day.
Why don't you take us out?
All right. Listener, we want your feedback. If you'd like to discuss a particular topic, then you can drop us a line at www.blurringthelinespodcast.com. You've found us one way or another, so you ought to have that URL. But if you want to learn more about us, you can learn about Peter, yogawithpeter.com, friendswithbrews.com, on the Mastodon, Nicolaitis@infosec.exchange, or bluesky@peternicolaitis.com. And you can find me at Roaming Roan Lavender Farm, or rlavenderfarm.com.
To contact either us or our guests, visit blurringthelinespodcast.com. If you like what you're hearing, do us a solid and subscribe to our podcast, and leave us a 5-star review in iTunes, Google Play Store, or wherever you found us.